This is episode 55 of the Renew the Arts podcast, why you need better taste and how to get it. Welcome to the Renew the Arts podcast, where we discuss the role of art and creativity in the church and in the world. I'm your host, Michael Minkoff. Our motto at Renew the Arts is liberate Christian creativity, and we're doing this through cultivating Christian communities in and through the arts by inspiring art patronage and supporting artists. If you'd like to join our community of monthly donors and contribute to this podcast, please visit renewthearts.org/donate. If you want to join the Porchlight Network and begin your journey into patronage, go to app.porchlight.art and sign up as a host or a tender. You got me monologuing. With this podcast, I'm going to try something a little bit different. I'm just going to be talking to you. I don't have a co-host or an interviewee or anyone like that talking with me today. I'm just going to talk to you about artistic discernment and aesthetic discernment. And one of the reasons we're doing this particularly is so that I can keep our monthly podcast episodes flowing, because it is simply easier for me to talk and edit my own recordings on my own time than it is to find interesting interviewees. But if you know of anybody who might like to come on and that you think would be a really good conversation partner on some topic having to do with arts and faith, please let me know. Let us know. Make a comment, and I'd be happy to look into it with Abby. All right, thank you. Let's get into it. Our topic for today is why you need better taste and how to get it. So we're going to start by talking about why you need better taste, and particularly artistic, aesthetic taste, and how that actually relates to your spiritual walk and virtue. Material discernment is connected to moral discernment. In the scriptures, when it talks about taste, the words used in both the Old and New Testaments are not necessarily separated between material and moral categories. The moral category of discernment or judgment has to do with determining right from wrong, and the material category would be determining evil from good, or that which is harmful from that which is beneficial or pleasurable. And you might think that there's a pretty big distinction between those two things, because material goodness is obviously different than moral goodness. For instance, you might say, oh, it feels so good, so it must be right. And someone else would say, well, there's lots of things that feel good that aren't right. And there are things that hurt and that bring pain that are also right. You might think like fasting or self-discipline or self-control doesn't necessarily feel good, but it is oftentimes right. So how are these two things connected? How is taste like moral discernment? I wrote an article a little while back, and you can read it on the website. It's called We Sin Because We Have Bad Taste. It's not entirely tongue-in-cheek. I actually think it's the truth. When I first started thinking about this, when I was younger, maybe a teenager, and I wondered, why is it that I sin? And I thought, okay, well, maybe it's an issue of judgment that I don't know well enough. And if I knew better, then I would be able to do a better job of following after what was right. But I learned a lot, and I did learn what was right, and yet still felt like I wasn't doing what was right. And so I expanded from maybe intellectual judgment to maybe it's a matter of willpower, that I fail to do the right thing, even though I know what's right, because I just can't will, I'm not willing myself well enough to not do the wrong things and to do the right things. But there's a major issue with that as well, and that is that your willpower is limited, and sometimes circumstances will overwhelm it. There will be a temptation that is so great that it overcomes your will, or there will be a trial or a circumstance so hard that it overcomes your will. And in those circumstances, how is it that you can still do the right thing? And I came to the conclusion that the only real, lasting, and sustainable power to do what is right is to actually desire to do the right thing, to have a taste for the right thing. And sort of like this, I've used this talking to some of my kids before. They know that I don't really like McDonald's very much. I actually don't like it at all. I have no taste for any of the food that McDonald's sells. And no judgment if you do, I just don't. I don't like it. So you can replace that with something else that you just simply don't like, that you have no taste for. And the thing is, when I drive by a McDonald's and I look over, and even if I were to sit in a McDonald's for whatever reason, I might do that, I am not tempted to buy McDonald's or to eat McDonald's food because I don't like it. And I'm not sitting there driving by, covering over my eyes, willing myself past the drive-thru to make sure that I can avoid eating McDonald's. I simply don't want it. And if only I could not want sin and I could desire instead, want instead, love instead what was right, then I really wouldn't have to exercise willpower in order to overcome my urges towards wickedness. And so the Bible talks about this development of moral discernment in material terms, because in many ways, your moral discernment is a taste issue. It is not merely a willpower or a knowledge issue. It is an issue of affections and of taste. And so if I could develop better taste, then I actually would be able to develop better moral discernment, but only in certain terms. So let me explain this a little further. Jesus is the life. He is the way, he is the truth, and he is also the life. And God himself is good, as we are told in many places. Not just that good comes from God or that God does good, but Psalm 119 actually says God is good and he does good, meaning there's the reason why he does good is because he is good, meaning God is goodness itself. Jesus is the life. If, in fact, we were to pursue good in its ultimate, purest, most true sense, we would be pursuing God and Jesus because they are, in fact, life itself. And so by developing our taste towards what is beneficial, what is the good life, truly, the truly good life, we are also, in some ways, developing an orientation toward God. And if it is true, true affections will lead to Jesus just as clearly as true doctrine or true law, or true obedience, that all three of those things are pointed at Jesus because he is the way of the will, the truth of the mind, and the life of the affections. And so I do think that a major issue with our walk with God that needs to be developed is this issue of affections, to develop disciplined affections, to cultivate loves that are whole and that are holy is one of the necessary building blocks of virtue. And so I do think that artistry and art as a workshop of the affections is a really necessary place where that can happen. And so to develop a deeper and richer life through the cultivation of the affections is going to necessarily, if it is true, point you in the direction of God and Jesus. And in fact, in some ways, that is the goal of righteousness. The goal of righteousness is to lead us to the goodness of Jesus and the goodness of God, to protect us from the harmful results of sin. Again, sin doesn't just produce moral corruption, it also produces physical and material corruption and harm and ultimately death. And so righteousness as its goal is pointed toward life. And if we learn to love what is good in life and the true things that are good in life, then ultimately we will be pointing ourselves toward Jesus. I'm not saying it's the only thing that needs to happen, but I am saying it's a major part of the development of virtue that in a lot of ways has been underutilized and underemphasized in the church at large, especially in the Western scientistic, will-oriented environments that many of us are in. So with that in mind, I do think that developing better taste is very important, and that cultivating and deepening our understanding of what is good and what is the good life is part of the reality of heaven making its way into earth and really filling earth with the glory and beauty of God. And so if we can develop better taste, if we can develop better discernment, our understanding of the beauty and goodness of God should develop along with it, as long as our tastes are not perverted, which again is part of the purpose of developing good taste, is to rid it of perversion and corruption and simplistic approaches, sentimentality, other kinds of shallow, superficial approaches to beauty are not adequate. And so we want to get deeper, get fuller understandings of what is the vision of the good life in Jesus. And artists can help us. And we can help them by developing better taste. So let's move to that. What does developing better taste do for artists and potentially for your community? Well, it increases real engagement with artists. Over and over again, when I've talked to artists, one of their major complaints is that people don't engage with their work. And that does have its effect in their lack of material support or financial support. And a lot of artists will obviously bemoan that because they need to live. And just like you, they would like to be able to do a job that they're good at and get paid to do it. But that oftentimes starts with real attention and real engagement. And many artists are, frankly, starved for that. And real, focused, consistent engagement and attention is one of the best things that you can do for the artists who are around you because they need it and it helps them. And if you develop better taste and more discerning taste, you'll become a better audience member for these artists, and you'll be able to contribute more to their development and to their movement toward themselves crafting and exploring the good life in Jesus. It also increases the number of artists with integrity who can be supported. Because a lot of the art that we do receive within the church is, in some sense, beholden to the level of our taste. So, for instance, there may be artists who make simple, easy to digest, easy to receive, almost candy-like pieces of art. And there's nothing wrong with those intrinsically, any more than there's anything wrong with McDonald's intrinsically. The problem is that a steady or complete diet of those things, because of a lack of discernment or a lack of depth in your aesthetic discernment, is going to mean that only the kinds of artists who can make those things with integrity, which are few, are ever going to be supported. And there are tons and tons of artists out there who don't make that kind of work. People who make deeper, more difficult to digest work that's not candy, that's, complex carbohydrates or meat. And those are also really good, but you have to have discernment in order to receive them and to digest them. And that discernment only comes through deeper understanding and better taste. And so if you have better taste, you can eat a dessert or a treat here and there and still enjoy it, but you're also going to be able to eat the meat and the potatoes and the other complex things that are being made by artists out there. And that means those artists will be supported by you, which means that they can make a living doing their work, which right now within the church, unfortunately, is oftentimes not the case, which means a lot of our best, most thoughtful, most deep penetrating, and understanding artists are not being supported within the church. And oftentimes they're not being supported in the world as well because of their emphasis or their approach to the arts that is more theologically oriented or oriented toward the glory of God. And so they end up in between audiences, as we've talked about quite a bit. So developing a deeper taste will broaden the number of artists that you can actually engage with and support, which will mean that more artists and a greater variety of artists will be able to contribute to the church's vision of the good life, which overall will benefit our entire community. And you'll be able to share that with your entire community, which is also a great benefit of developing broader, deeper taste. Hey there, Renew the Arts podcast listeners. Sorry to interrupt myself, but here in a moment, we'll get right back to our discussion on taste. I want to thank a patron who has faithfully supported Renew the Arts from its inception and has also been a consistent listener to our podcast. That's Lisa Hood, whose insightful comments on podcast episode 49, Do Poor People Make Poor Patrons, provided the spark and most of the content for the second half of this podcast. We're so thankful for your engagement with us, Lisa, and for your faithful support. Your consistent contributions of attention and resources make the work we do at Renew the Arts possible. And to all our supporters, listeners, patrons, and hosts, I'm so grateful for your partnership as we cultivate Christian communities in and through the arts by inspiring art patronage and supporting artists. If you'd like to join our community of monthly donors and contribute to this podcast, please visit renewthearts.org/donate. If you want to join the Porchlight Network and begin your journey into patronage, go to app.porchlight.art and sign up as a host or a tender. Let's talk for the rest of our time about how you would go about to develop better taste in the arts. And I'm going to give some practical advice here, all of which things I've had to do myself, and it's not exhaustive, and there's probably lots of other things that you could think that would be also good, and that's fine. But here's a few things that have really worked for me, and I'll start with sort of the broadest one that has a few different applications. Number one, I think you should focus on communion in and through the arts. And so let me give a broad overview of what that means. When I say focus on communion, what I mean is that the experience of the arts isn't really an individualistic or isolated event. Even if you're listening to music by yourself, someone made it. Or if you're looking at a piece of art by yourself, someone else made it. And so there's never really a time where art is able to happen outside of some kind of communion or community engagement. And I think that the larger number of your local people you can include in that, the better. So one of the things I recommend is that you should engage in the fellowship of the saints in mutual enjoyment of the arts. And there's a reason for this. Again, you might say, well, how in the world is that going to help me to develop better taste? Well, there's probably people in your community who like things that you don't like and who know how to like things that you don't yet like, meaning they've spent a lot of time and made the kinds of investments necessary to have a real enthusiasm and deep understanding of particular pieces of art or particular artistic genres or other things like that that you don't really get. It's not really your thing. Well, you can use your desire to commune with them in this mutual enjoyment in order to deepen and broaden your understanding by submitting yourselves to those saints' better, or at least in this case, different discernment. Let me give you an example. And again, I'm going to use food. I love food. For a really, really long time, I did not like raw oysters. They're still not my favorite food, but for a long time, I hated them. The first time I had them, I was about 13 years old. French foreign exchange student's parents came in to visit his host home here in the States, and they really wanted some raw oysters. And so we went and we got some at the local farmer's market. My parents brought them home, and I ate one and gagged on it and thought it was disgusting. And then I ate another one and gagged on that one as well and decided I really, really don't like raw oysters. Well, fast forward a few years, and I have a number of friends who really like raw oysters. And so we would go to Florida. There's a place down there, a raw bar, where they serve apparently very delicious raw oysters. And I just didn't eat them. But the sadness of it to me is that I had all these people who I respected and I loved, and I didn't think their tastes were perverted or that they were unrighteous or anything like that. I mean, these are my Christian saintly brothers and sisters. And they're having a great time eating these raw oysters. And here I am, you know, grumpily refusing to enjoy these things with them because I simply don't like it. And I decided I really didn't like that that was the case and that I wanted to commune with them in this. And so I made a commitment to myself where whenever I had the opportunity to eat raw oysters with these love and, you know, these beloved people, I would take that opportunity. And I said I only had to eat one, but I had to eat it with a desire to be open to liking it. And so I did that for a number of years. Whenever I had the opportunity, I would eat just one raw oyster with the openness to, I want to try to like this. I don't want it, but I want to want it. And so let's see if I can, you know, keep on trying it until eventually maybe something will change and this will be an acquired taste. It took about 8 years because I don't always go to Florida and don't always have the opportunity, but I took every opportunity. And after a number of years, I had an oyster, a raw oyster, and I enjoyed it enough to have another one. And so I had another one, and I ended up having five at that sitting. And now I do, in fact, like raw oysters. If I go out with friends and family who really love them, I can enjoy them as well with them. And that only increases my fellowship with those other saints. And this can be applied and extended to really any of the arts that you don't necessarily like. You can use the people in your life who do like them as ways of fellowshipping with them and thereby also giving yourself the opportunity to deepen and broaden your tastes. Another really valuable person in your communion that you can use and should use, or not person, but set of people, are artists. Who have developed skill and probably have gifts and maybe even have a calling in the arts. They know a lot about the arts and they know what they enjoy and they also produce work. And so submitting yourself to their value in those terms is another way you can fellowship with these artists and enter into communion for the mutual enjoyment in and through the arts. Another way that you can, again, and that will help you, by the way, to develop taste, obviously, because you can always ask questions. And if you don't like something or don't understand something or you don't get why they like it so much, you can ask questions. And asking questions and listening carefully is a great way to develop a better understanding of why these things are good. And then just keep trying it. And eventually, you know, with familiarity and a broadness of that experience, it'll eventually start to deepen as well. And you'll start to understand at least these touch points that are connected to all these people in your life that you love, and you'll be able to love them, you know, with these things and around these things and in these things, and it will enrich your life and point you again to the goodness of Jesus. Another necessary place where you can develop the arts is in hospitality to strangers, in inviting people into your good life. Because again, trying to figure out how you can please and how you can serve the material needs of the people around you are one way in which your taste is going to develop and broaden. And the reason why is because you have your own tastes, but other people have their tastes. And when you attempt to submit yourself to pleasing them, you learn through that communion all these other ways in which the good life can be pursued, because there are lots of different facets to the material good life that Jesus has granted to us on the earth. And the experience and the desire to please and to enter into the experience of other people is one of the ways you can broaden and deepen your own understanding of what the good life looks like. And I would say with all of these, they got to start locally. One of the major issues with a lot of the arts community in general is that we're getting our food, you know, our artistic food from afar, which is fine. You know, it's fine if you listen to things from other countries or from other cities or from artists you've never met or known. But it's also the case that there is a local culture that you should be developing and understanding and entering into. And that means that there are local artists and local art scenes and other things like that that you could easily partake of more easily, in fact, than you can get them from afar, at least as far as personal connection is concerned. And personal connection is really important when it comes to the arts. Most of the patrons that we know that have furthered and deepened their understanding of the arts have done that through personal engagement, like face-to-face personal engagement with artists or with other people who really care about the arts. And it's through that personal engagement that these things become valuable to them and become worthy of investment. They make that investment, and then their heart soon follows. And then they start to make more investments, which increases their love for these things. So I would say start where you're at right now to in your local environment. And with that in mind, I'll tell you this. My second piece of advice, so the first piece of advice is focus on communion in and through the arts, not just isolated or individual taste, but a communion of taste in your particular community. The second thing that I would say is, and this is super practical, enjoy what you enjoy already more deeply and repeatedly. So a lot of people, like I did this, I would go to a museum, an art museum, and just feel massively overwhelmed. Because you go into a museum and there's hundreds of pieces and many, many stories, and you know, you're having to walk through and you feel like you're not able to give any piece a lot of time, and you know that all these pieces are important and that you should know them because they're all in the museum here. And so you end up feeling overwhelmed, maybe even fatigued, and you don't really feel like you belong there, maybe at the end of the day. I did this for a lot of years. And finally, I said, you know what, there's too much here and I'm never going to know all of it. And so I'm just going to go and I'm not going to run, but I'm, you know, it's not good museum etiquette, but I'm going to walk briskly through this entire environment until I see something that intrigues me for whatever reason. I don't even need to know the reason, but if something arrests me, stops me in my tracks, I'll just stop and I'll give that particular piece, whichever one it was that arrested me, I'll give it a lot of time. I'll really try and invest in it. If it's a painting or a sculpture, I'll look it over in a detailed way. I try and find out a little bit more about the artist, try and find out a little bit more about that particular piece, and, you know, basically dive in right there in something that has arrested me or caused me to be interested for whatever reason. And so you already have things, I'm sure, favorite movies, favorite songs, albums, you know, or paintings or sculpture or any of these things You already have favorites, favorite novels, favorite poems that you continually revisit or could continually revisit. And I recommend continually revisiting them, revisiting them repeatedly, especially instead of looking up something new or consumable, you know, which may or may not have any value. All great art bears and rewards repeating. And so you don't need to find new art all the time. It's very exhausting. So I would just say, whatever you already enjoy, continue to enjoy it and deepen and repeat your enjoyment of that and give your full attention again and again on revisiting those pieces. And I think that if your full attention is rewarded with fresh discoveries and new enjoyment, then that's a sign that the piece that you're appreciating is really worthy of that attention. What will also happen, though, is that you'll find that a lot of the things that you say you enjoy don't really warrant or support repeated revisiting, that eventually you get tired of them, they get played out, you're not interested. And if there's an art that you have liked in the past that can't sustain that kind of multiple revisitation with undivided attention, it's likely that it's just not worth much attention in the first place, and you can move on. One of the ways that you can, you know, you don't want to waste your time. So one of the things that you can say, and this is my third piece of advice is cut your teeth on the classics. And one of the reasons for that is that you know these are pieces or artworks that are worthy of revisiting because they have been revisited by large swaths of the human race over a long period of time. And so you can find some anchor pieces. Again, you don't have to like everything that has ever been liked, but find some pieces among the classics that in any genre, in every genre, that have been approved over the centuries and have informed and shaped your culture very profoundly, and give those a lot of your time. If you have time that you're setting aside, which I recommend for the arts, I recommend that you give a lot of that time to things that have already stood the test of time. You know, I mean, Michelangelo, Shakespeare, Bach, there's a reason these guys are famous, and their art has stood the test of time. It's worth investing in, definitely investing in over the most recent New York Times bestseller, which may or may not stand the test of time and probably isn't worth your full and undivided attention. If you want to develop taste, you should really become more familiar with these genre-shaping artists over the centuries. And again, you don't have to know all of them. Do like you do in the museum, you know, go through, and if you find a piece or an artist or a work where you're like, wow, that is really, I don't even know what it's doing for me, but it's doing a lot for me, then just stick with that for a while and really dive in and get the deep roots into that particular artist or particular work. And that'll really help to develop your particular taste and also to deepen and broaden your taste. All right. My fourth piece of advice is to set aside a fixed amount of time on a regular schedule to learn how to make art. Now, I know that a lot of people are going to hear this piece of advice and they're going to say, well, I don't think that I'm much of an artist or I'm not a creative or whatever. But let me just recommend that you take a poetry workshop, that you take piano or guitar lessons, that you try your hand at drawing or painting or photography. And I can guarantee you, at first, you will not be good. I mean, no one is good at first. Every artist that you've ever seen who's really, 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 really good, their first pictures, their first songs, their first sculptures, their first movies, were not very good. And you probably won't be good at first either, or maybe ever. But you'll at least start to be able to measure more accurately what it would take for you to be good or what it would take for someone else to be good. And this is a really important part of artistic discernment, because you'll start to have a more intimate knowledge of the process, and that will increase your discernment considerably. Let me give you an example. So when I first started playing the guitar, and I'm not a very good guitarist, and I probably never will be, but I'm adequate for, you know, hymn sings and stuff like that. And when I first started playing when I was 15, I remember learning these songs that I was listening to on the radio. And I don't even remember all of them, but they were really simple and really easy to play. And so I really enjoyed the fact that, oh, this song that I know of on the radio, I can play it right now. I've been playing for, you know, 30 minutes, and I can already play this song on the guitar. And at first that was enjoyable and there's nothing wrong with that. But within a month or two or 3 months or 6 months, I felt like I had lost respect for these pieces and I didn't even want to listen to them because I felt like if a beginner guitarist like me is able to play these, how much skill or how much value could there really be in this? And so I started searching out works that showed the kind of skill I didn't have yet, but that I knew could be had. And that really did help me to understand and to develop a taste and appreciation for skill and for vision, for the kinds of things that I wouldn't be able to do, but that I was able to understand how they might be done if someone had greater skill or greater talent. And that was really helpful to me. And honestly, it's a lot of fun. It is a lot of fun, and it really helps a lot to develop your understanding and your discernment. And so I would just set aside a fixed amount of time. It doesn't have to be a lot of time, but, you know, just a little bit of time. Maybe, seriously, 30 minutes a week, an hour a week, something like that. Anything like that will help. And a lot of these things can be done for free. You can get a self-teaching book. I never took any lessons myself on guitar. I just got a couple of books with chords and some other things like that. Having a teacher is definitely helpful. And if you're paying for it, it'll probably make sure you do it. But you don't have to pay money. And I mean, there's lots of community poetry workshops and communities and things like that that you can get involved in. And you can do that. And any of that will help. Seriously, it will just help you to get some idea of what it would take to make a good piece of work. And that'll help you to appreciate good works, you know, more deeply. And then my last piece of advice is, and it's kind of been throughout, but don't be anxious about getting an exhaustive understanding of the arts or even about having good taste. The point of having taste is not so that you can have good taste, but so that you can use it to get delicious, wonderful things into your life and to appreciate those things more deeply. It's not about status, and it shouldn't be about status. And I know some people do make it about that, and things can get really pretentious and snobby. And in some ways, maybe that's why you've been avoiding art museums and, you know, fine arts in general. But it doesn't have to be like that. And you can be a great contributor to helping it not to be like that by doing these things, developing taste, and not being a snob. So don't be anxious about getting an exhaustive understanding. You're not going to. You're not even going to get an exhaustive understanding of one piece or one genre if it's worth your time. The world of art is nearly limitless, and no one knows it all. And so budget your time, have regular times where you do all of the things that I've mentioned, and make sure to fit it in your schedule, or you probably won't do it, and you know how that is. But don't feel like you need to put a huge amount of time in. Seriously, I'm telling you, 30 minutes of sustained and undivided attention a week would probably make a bigger difference than one humongous marathon once a year. I remember when I was learning Biblical Hebrew, best advice I ever got from my Biblical Hebrew professor, Jed Davis, was, Michael, you need to spend 15 minutes a day reading Biblical Hebrew. And that doesn't sound like a lot, and it's definitely doable. And I've done it, and your progress is slow, but you don't lose the things you've already gained, and you slowly grow. And it really is enough. It's enough. And it's way better. Let's say I were to take those 15 minutes a day, you know, for 6 days or whatever, and now you've got, what, an hour and a half. If I did an hour and a half once a week, it would be way worse than 15 minutes over 6 days. Truly, it really would. And I've experimented with that. If I miss a few days of Hebrew and I go back and I try and do some sort of like big investment in order to try and get what I've gotten back, it's not as effective. So a little bit consistently, way better than a lot inconsistently. So just put it in your schedule and don't get anxious. You'll grow and it'll be worth your time and it'll be good for your soul. Thank you all for listening. We're going to close this particular podcast episode with a newly released track from longtime Renew the Arts sponsored artist, Make Sure, the brainchild of Joshua Jackson. The track is called Infinite Rail, and it's on Make Sure's new record, June, released on Tooth & Nail Records. This is a fitting song for a lot of reasons. First, first record we sponsored with Josh Jackson was 2015's In Clover, when he was named Fiery Crash still. And I think he changed his name because too many people were trying to look up his music and instead finding pictures of horrible traffic accidents. And so he changed it to make sure fairly recently. And Lisa Hood, the same Lisa Hood I shouted out earlier in my interruption, and also who provided the inspiration for this episode, she actually gave to the In Clover Kickstarter in 2015, and it was her first gift to our organization. So now, nearly a decade later, Josh is releasing his second record with Tooth & Nail Records, which was a dream of his to be signed onto that label when we first started working together in 2015. So Lisa's support and the support of so many others contributed greatly to making that dream a reality and supporting Josh along the way. And not all of our sponsored artists have such success stories, but everyone has a community and an engaged and supportive audience like Lisa with us that sustains and encourages them to keep shaping their vision of the good life for the sake of Jesus and his body. Also appropriate to our conversation concerning taste and discernment, the specific song I chose, Infinite Rail, off of Josh's new record, begins with a lament that the speaker loves the wrong things more than Jesus, though the wrong things continually harm him. In the beginning of the song, he says, "I love the ghost that haunts in my heart more than you, even though he drains me." And at the center of the song is this plea, "Make what I want and what I need the same thing." In other words, make it so I love and want what is right more than what is wrong. Amen. May Jesus, our righteousness, be Jesus, our good.
Trains me and I